Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Good to have you all with us today. On our way into our program, I will remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. For more information, www.mecu.com. Or go to steinershow.org and click on their banner. It's always there, like they have been for this show and for this community. Again, mecu.com, Baltimore's Credit Union, MeQ. We're going to tackle the issue of homelessness here. We had a show planned out with folks from the Mayor's Office of Homelessness and other folks we reached out to come on. They could not join us today. I've been in email contact with them. They do want to be part of this conversation. And we're rescheduling another show when they can come in the beginning of March. To tackle this with them, and they really want to be part of this, and we'll have them on. So that's why they're not in the studio today, not because they didn't want to be here, because they were in the middle of a count, other things were going on, and they couldn't join us here in studio today. However, we do have with us Bonnie Lane, who is a local activist here, who has been homeless in the streets of Baltimore herself. She's a member of Housing Our Neighbors, HUN, an emerging group of Baltimore folks comprised of students, professionals, people experiencing homelessness, and advocates. She's on the editorial board of Baltimore's newest paper, Word on the Street, and it is an incredible paper put out by people who are homeless. They're a member of the local Faces of Homeless Speakers Bureau. Bonnie, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Kevin Lindemood is with us. He's been here before, now president and CEO of Healthcare for the Homeless since 2011, began his career there as an outreach worker almost 20 years ago. Good to have you back with us. And of course,
nice to be here, Mark.
The man he took over from, Jeff Singer, who is the founder and former executive director of Healthcare for the Homeless, back in the studio.
It's delightful to be here, Mark.
Retired, but still causing trouble, as I said to him this afternoon on the phone.
On many levels.
On many levels, which is cool.
Everywhere he can.
Yes, this is a good thing. Councilman Ricky Spector is with us, who represents the 5th District here in Baltimore City.
I'm not retiring, so I can't cause any trouble.
You can cause some trouble if you want to. And Ricky has put in a bill to
amend,
stop panhandling on the street corners in Baltimore. We'll talk about that in the context of all of this. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. We want to hear from you. And let me start with this. We when the 75 beds was announced, there were a lot of homeless people and activists in the back of the room who were saying, holding up signs about homelessness and how this 75 beds is kind of meaningless from their perspective. You wrote a piece to the entire leadership advisory group, which includes the mayor's office on homelessness. Talk a bit about what you said.
And now that I'm retired, I have time to do these sorts of things. Last week, we celebrated the 5th birthday of the 10-year plan to end homelessness.
Right.
So we've been through half of the plan. And some of the word on the street folks, including Bonnie Lane, have been evaluating our progress on the plan. And unfortunately, we found that progress is extremely slow. The major reason we believe for that is that much of the plan doesn't address the fundamental causes of homelessness. Homelessness happens because people are too poor to afford housing and need services to help them get jobs, disability assistance, and to get into affordable housing. But in the city, we have a terrible affordable housing crisis. And almost nothing's been done in the last 5 years to address that housing crisis. In fact, we've gone backwards. We passed an inclusionary zoning law that was supposed to create more affordable housing. As best we can tell, it's created fewer than a dozen units in 5 years. Montgomery County, on the other hand, has created 10,000 units. Why can't we do better? But we're not doing much. In terms of incomes, poverty, as we all know, has been exploding. 25% of all of our neighbors in Baltimore City live in poverty. What have we done to address that? Not much. And the services, there are some more services. There is some advance over where we were 5 years ago. There's better coordination for outreach, for sure. There's a new city shelter. Unfortunately, the 275 beds that were built replace 400 beds that were lost over the last few years.
Lost how?
Shelters closed, mostly because they couldn't afford to keep going. you know, we have been in a recession. I'm not blaming the city for much of this.
These are shelters that were run by the city or shelters run by nonprofits?
The city hasn't run shelters.
So these are nonprofits who ran shelters.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Some organizations decided not to serve homeless folks anymore. The YWCA had a wonderful shelter
for women and
downtown.
Children.
Yeah.
Right.
They decided they didn't want homeless people in the same building where their other customers were.
And that was the building that used to be on the corner right by the Enoch Pratt Library Central Branch.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. So there are more people experiencing homelessness. We know that. There are fewer shelter beds. There's less affordable housing. We've torn down 40% of all the public housing in Baltimore City over the last 15 years. We've demolished it. That's 7,000 units of housing no longer available to poor people. But these kinds of trends don't bode well for ending homelessness, and the 10-year plan's not doing much about most of them.
So, all right, I was there at the beginning of this 10-year plan. I went to the first 3 years' worth of meetings. I have not been to many meetings in the last couple of years, nor any in the last year. I want to put that up front there, the Leadership Advisory Group. But I was there very heavily in the beginning. And so the question is, why? Why is there so little progress on being able to end homelessness? I mean, the Inclusionary Act, did it have no teeth in it? Was it not codified in law saying that X number of houses have to be included in every development built in Baltimore?
It says that, but it also says that the city can waive that requirement simply if the housing commissioner decides it ought to be waived. And apparently, he's made that decision in a lot of instances. The most recent one, Lexington Square Development, right downtown. The city announced recently they're waiving the requirement for any affordable housing, not just in that development, because the housing could be elsewhere. You could build it in east or west or north or south Baltimore.
So it doesn't mean that the housing that's built has to be within the development itself.
Right. They can just contribute to a fund.
But it has to be somewhere.
But that was waived too.
Mm-hmm. They started out with 12 units. I was in some of those hearings and for the super block, and now they don't have any affordable housing. But affordable housing in Baltimore, you have to make $17 an hour to afford the regular market rent on a one-bedroom apartment. And I don't know that many people in Baltimore that are making $17 an hour.
One of the things you said in the piece that you wrote, which I think is really important, just to, and Kevin and Ricky, I want to get you right in here, is that in terms of what costs are in housing, and I'm trying to find this exact quote because I had it right here underlined, and somehow it underlined itself. Sometimes computers and I do not get along well. Here we go. So, for example, you write, the hourly mean wage of $325,797 households, renter households. So that's a lot of people. I mean, that's, you're talking about 326,000 households who are renting. The medium hourly wage is $15.52, or only 65.6% of the $23.67 an hour necessary to afford market rate housing in Baltimore. Right?
Hence a homelessness crisis. Hence a crisis of evictions. When the 10-year plan was written, there were 5,000 evictions a year. The plan says we're going to address that problem. Last year, there were 7,000 evictions. How has the plan addressed that problem?
And we interviewed families here on the show and over the last year that we need to go back to and see what happened to them, of people who have been thrown out of public housing or so there is no public housing, but Section 8 housing.
Yes.
Where if somebody in the family was busted for reefer, let's say, for example, the entire family is thrown out.
Exactly. You can't have your kids there. It's a big law because I live in subsidized housing. There are still a few places left, and that's a big thing in your lease. If you have a drug crime or have anyone in your house with a drug crime, you're automatically.
So we interviewed a family.
Excluded.
I'll let you come in, Kevin. We interviewed a family of a grandmother and a grandfather. She's been clean for 14 years. She's been working, had her job cut back, so she had to go to public sector housing. Her husband was laid off, but they were raising their grandchildren. Because one of her sons was arrested for reefer and the police beat down the door but found no drugs in the house, they were kicked out in the street. So that happens all the time in Baltimore City.
Certainly does.
Kevin.
Certainly does. I just wanted to weigh into this plan to end homelessness discussion for a second. There have been no shortage of plans to end homelessness over the past 30 years. Jeff, you, Mark, the councilwoman, certainly been involved in these plans over the years. When talking about a plan, it seems that there are two elements that are really important. The plan itself, is it the right plan? And the political will behind it. Is there political will to move this plan forward? This particular 10-year plan, I would submit, has absolutely the right goals. Housing, comprehensive health care, incomes, a robust service system. I would submit that it's got the right focus. It's centered on the housing first approach. It essentially says that housing is the solution to homelessness fundamentally, and that people need the supportive services necessary to stay stably housed and off the street. So it's got the right goals. It's got the right focus. It's not fully considering the broader policy context. And that brings us to political will, not just in Baltimore City, but nationally. We're spending as a nation 40% on affordable housing of what we spent in 1979. It's no wonder that we've not been able to increase the supply of affordable housing. Some of that, I think, has to do with local leadership and priorities. A lot of that has to do with federal funding for it. The gap, as Jeff mentioned, between rich and poor and the persistence of poverty has resulted in more and more people experiencing homelessness for the first time. So at the same time that we talk about how to end it, we've got to talk about preventing the homelessness of other individuals. Otherwise, we're talking about bailing out a bathtub with a tablespoon without turning off the water faucet. So we've got to turn off that water faucet by making housing more available, healthcare more affordable, and incomes more livable in order to make homelessness rare and brief while we end the homelessness of the some 40,000 people that will experience it over the course of a year.
Kevin, not to minimize
Ricky
what
Spector,
you're saying,
City Councilwoman.
But jobs, 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 jobs.
Absolutely.
And so when you talk about the homelessness, part of it is because the jobs are the problem. And I have just myself supported an act for the Hyatt Hotel to come forth and provide benefits to the people that are working there because there's a city investment in the Hyatt Hotel and as the Hilton. And the issue is that instead of having full-time employees, they're switching to contract employees. They're using employment agencies, which gets around benefits and all the things and pay and the pay scale. So you can't talk about trying to have a plan for homelessness without trying to have a plan for jobs. That's what makes the difference.
Absolutely, and jobs that actually pay enough so that an individual and a family can afford housing in the community.
And benefits, benefits, health benefits and retirement benefits. That's why older people are now sleeping in their car, because they worked all their life. They never were homeless. But once they don't have that job, they don't have the benefits. And so that's what we're experiencing. That's what I am as a council person. I have calls in my office that 75-year-old women are sleeping in the car.
Yes.
And we'll be talking about that in the last part of this hour. But so the question is, what should be the response? I mean, how do you make a response to really address the issue of homelessness? I want to get to Ricky. The bill you're putting in that council has caused a lot of controversy over it because it affects the people who are homeless directly.
I think that they've done a study, and the people that are taking the risk of playing in traffic aren't necessarily homeless people, Mark.
Most of them are homeless, or they're addicted, or they are mentally impaired, or they can't find work. They don't have jobs.
But they're physically at risk by being in traffic.
And the current law gives the police the authority to arrest them, currently, without changing the law.
No, it doesn't.
I have it right here.
Yes, it does. It's illegal to ask for money from a driver of a vehicle or an occupant of a vehicle in traffic.
I'm not interested in arresting them. I'm interested in having the police the tool to stop them from being on the median strip, walking into traffic.
But they already have that tool under existing law.
It's not the way it's being enforced.
Ah, but that's a different question.
That's a different question.
That's what I have
to
highlight.
There's no need to amend the bill.
Then
you
there
should sit down with the police
The terms of my amendment is basically to follow what the county did in enforcing the law. I can tell you that the police are saying their hands are tied.
I haven't spoken to the police, but...
Why would their hands be tied?
Because they are saying they don't... I don't want the people to be arrested, number one. I just want the police to be able to say you have to cease and desist from being in traffic in order to do what you're doing.
May I read from
I'm thinking. Go ahead,
May I read from the bill?
Your bill.
This isn't the bill, actually. This is the existing ordinance.
And I have the one that I
okay,
presented.
I have that as well.
Yes.
But the existing ordinance says that aggressive soliciting, which is illegal currently, includes intentionally blocking or interfering with the safe passage of a person or vehicle, intimidating, following, as well as asking for money from any operator or occupant of a motor vehicle that is on a public street, or from any operator or occupant of a motor vehicle on a public street in exchange for blocking, occupying, or reserving a space. All of that is already illegal.
Jeff, I think that if you read what I have on page 2, the amendment, I'm specifically talking about lane divider, talking about being in the median strip, and being site-specific. And I don't think that that was the interpretation, because they're not enforcing what you call currently is the law.
I have a question. Is there going to be a bill about, I guess aggressive fundraising falls into this aggressive solicitation. I've seen young children out in the medians of traffic. Are they going to be hassled by the cops not to fundraise for their schools?
I think that there is a risk that you take by putting young children in the middle of the highway. Yes, I do think so.
How many instances have we had of people being hit who have been panhandling?
Well, I nearly hit someone, and that's what brought it to mind.
But how many instances do we have of people actually being hit?
I hope all that comes out at the hearing. I hope that all comes out at the hearing. But it is threatening.
What we want to fundamentally say is that there is a law, like it or not, there is a law that prohibits any dangerous activities for children, for adults. The law already prohibits that. It doesn't perhaps prohibit someone from standing on the side of a road.
It doesn't.
And asking for money. Nor should it. When you live in a society as unequal and as unjust as ours, the price we pay for that is people will beg. And often they'll beg at the side of the road. And as long as they're not doing anything dangerous, I think they should have the right
getting
to do that.
Getting in the traffic is dangerous,
Jeff. Yes, but that's already illegal, getting into traffic. Standing by the side of the road with a sign that says, "Help me, I'm homeless," causes anxiety.
Well, somebody
to a lot
standing
of us
on the median strip asking or begging can't very well have motorists come out of the car and give them food or a donation. They're not going to get out of their car on the road.
I have another
question.
The
people approach the driver. They get off the median or off out of the divider.
And that's already prohibited under existing law.
And the question is,
it's not being enforced, Kevin.
Right, but a new piece of legislation then is similarly may not be enforced and enforce what's already on the book. I mean, essentially, I was driving over here, Mark, and my little yellow light came on the car, telling me that I was out of gas. Right, the dummy light. Public begging is very much a similar kind of warning light in our community when society has gotten to a point where it's completely unequal. And we have more and more people begging for basic necessities on the streets. Generally, public begging goes down when the economy improves and goes up when the economy tanks. During this current recovery, it's incredibly lopsided, as we all know, leaving more and more people, 60, 70-year-olds living in cars with literally no place to go. This kind of increase in public begging should be a warning to all of us, and we shouldn't respond by cracking down and passing such ordinances that, frankly, are already on the books.
Well, then why are we not allowed to talk on the cell phone, and why must we have safety belts on in the car? There's a safety factor here.
And it's already
and that's
illegal.
What I'm talking about.
Right.
But it's not, at this point, I am telling you, it is not enforced. Maybe I need to bring attention to the enforcement of the law.
Maybe you do. I mean, I'd like to see kind of studies that even tell us who's really being hurt by this.
And
I haven't heard many reports about people being hit.
Jeff and Kevin would know this better, probably Bonnie, but I am under the impression that the majority of these people that are doing this are not necessarily homeless. They're not necessarily homeless. I don't know if you've done a better study than what has been reported to me.
I haven't studied. I have actually been homeless, and I have panhandled before, and it was not an enjoyable experience because I had to eat. However, I wasn't in the traffic doing it. But I have another – I mean, what are we going to do about not our paper, but there are other papers in town that are on the side of the road that wander in the traffic. People pull up in their cars. There's an exchange
like
of money. Are we going to outlaw that?
The Sun Papers, absolutely. Yeah.
Let me just go to the phones here. We're holding people on. Reverend Meredith, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Good evening, all.
Good evening.
I'm not too sure about the councilwoman's law, but I do know this. Just as a female, as a woman, I'm very concerned about the school children. I'm standing in the street, panhandling. I'm very concerned about the adults that seem to kind of just stand on the sidelines and supervise these children, particularly young girls in short cheerleading outfits. And I've looked around in traffic and seen men ogle at these girls.
And I've seen them.
And
I've seen them without clothes on.
And something needs to be done about that. And people need to use better judgment than having their children out there. And as a matter of fact, are they really out there supporting their team, or are they out there panhandling for adults who are abusing substances, forcing them to panhandle? Because that's a situation, too, and we need to deal with all of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's try to get another caller in here. African, you're on the air.
Yes, this is African. I would like to know what can be done about these same homeless people. This is Lexington Market now. And they are carrying, spreading diseases and everything. They are not clean. They don't bathe. I had to go personally up to them and say, okay, go to the washroom. Okay. But then when I offered the person a dollar, he acted like I was trying to rob him or something. And so, you know, they are spreading germs amongst the people and the sanitation workers. They are naive. They are not even wearing nose masks because the films from the trash get in their system, and it's very hazardous to the health. I'm concerned about the hazardousness to the health by them not taking baths, spreading diseases right in the open air.
All right, African, thank you for calling in. We could have more public bathhouses that might help, but we don't have those either.
I think if people had access to go take showers and baths, some of the people who are homeless, who, as are you described, they would gladly do it. If you're in the city shelter, you get woke up at 4:30 in the morning. You're out on the street at 5:30, and you can't go back there for several hours. And if you're not allowed to go anywhere and stand anywhere, like downtown, if you're standing in a park for too long and there's a group of homeless people around, the cops tell you to move, or the downtown partnership tells you to move. Where are these people supposed to go to do this is my question.
Bonnie, does it ever occur to you that they could try to find a job?
How can you find a job when you have to be in line at a shelter at 11:30, 12 o'clock in the afternoon? Tell me how you can work carrying all your belongings with you. And the current rule at the shelter downtown, you have to be in line to get a bed for a night by like 12:30 in the afternoon. Now, there are many people I know who are currently looking for jobs, who are currently homeless,
that are trying to do it,
and the city's making it, or I'm sorry,
that
not
was
the city,
part of the city's
they're making
plan.
It impossible.
Bonnie, I'm sorry, maybe you haven't been here long enough, but the city has tried to help the people that want to find a job in this situation that you're explaining.
I'm not saying they're not trying, but they used to have a working man's shelter. I stayed at the old shelter, not the new one. And it's situated in a parking garage, and there were about 400 people there, and they had an actual working man's section. So if you were looking for work or working, you could come in and you could still have a place to sleep at night. I was on the resident council at the current shelter. There's a government there now. They don't have that anymore. It's like every time you try to get out of it by finding employment, there is another barricade put in your way. I'm not saying they never have tried to do anything. I'm saying currently whatever they're doing is not working.
We did a recent survey at Healthcare for the Homeless, and at least 20% of respondents, a little more than 20%, were in fact working and weren't earning incomes that were high enough to afford a place to stay. Other national data suggested that between 25 and 45% of people experiencing homelessness are working at least part-time.
I have the same situation, Kevin, with kids who have graduated college. They can't get a job. It's tough to get a job.
Absolutely.
So it isn't just because you're homeless.
Right. Yeah, but you just – that contradicts what you said earlier. But why don't these people get jobs?
I said homelessness needs to be addressed also with providing jobs for people. I say that. Yeah. But just because you're homeless doesn't mean you can't get a job. There are kids that are graduating college and can't get jobs.
Absolutely.
It's tough.
You're absolutely right. We need to address homelessness through employment, through housing, through access to health care.
That was the point I was making, Mark.
And we need our energies focused on this area and not on on ordinances that criminalize begging and
not criminalizing. It's safety. There's a safety issue you're totally ignoring.
But what it ends up doing is further criminalizing this behavior. It makes it harder for us to help in the final analysis.
You have the last word for this minute because we have to go to this segment we have with on homelessness in San Francisco, what's happening to senior citizens there. We're going to turn to that. I want to thank Kevin Lindenwood for being here, Councilman Inspector Bonnie Lane, homeless activist in our community, and Jeff Singer, founder and CEO of Healthcare for the Homeless. Good to have you all here. Don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Good to have you back with us here. We'll continue our conversation. I was wrong. We'll go to our next segment in about 10 minutes to find out about senior women who are going homeless. We're still here with Bonnie Lane, local activist who helps put out word on the street, which is on the editorial board, has been homeless, has been an organizer against homelessness in this community for a long time, member of Housing Our Neighbors, HUN. Councilman Ricky Spector is with us from the 5th District. Kevin Lindenwood is President and CEO of Healthcare for the Homeless since 2011, 20 years in that organization. And Jeff Singer was the founder of Healthcare for the Homeless and its executive director until 2011. 410-319-8888. So I apologize, listeners. Clarence and Matt, call back. We'll get you on the air as soon as you call back. So it was my mistake. 410-319-8888. If you get back on, we'll get you back on the air to throw your opinions out here to our guests. So where we just left off, I mean, it seems to me that let me just throw this out as a question. If we are focusing on things like panhandling, it seems like we're not focusing on issues that are really addressing homeless. In other words, if we had to put teeth in the law, shouldn't we be putting teeth in the law that says that if a developer develops a house, that they have to, no exceptions, whatever that number is, 12% of whatever law called for, have to provide 12% of the units for people for low income, whether it's off-site or on-site. Shouldn't that be what we put teeth into? Wouldn't that go a long way to dent homelessness and maybe even dent panhandling or having more treatment facilities so that people who – a lot of the people I know who are on the street begging that I've personally talked to when I stop are junkies, people who are addicted. I know a whole crew of them who live in one house in a certain area that I know about, and they take separate corners and they go off and hustle money so they can get their fix. I mean, are we addressing the right questions? Is the question I want to ask.
Well, I used the term criminalizing, Councilwoman, to Mark's point that if someone's addicted and on the streets asking for money, we could put teeth in the law and make that illegal. They're still going to be out there doing it unless we've provided addiction treatment and tried to treat the addiction. And if they're still out there doing it and there's now teeth in the law, then they are going to get arrested for it. And when they come out of jail, it's going to be far more difficult for us to then help them because they're going to have a criminal record that's going to keep them from eligibility for housing, keep them from eligibility for employment. Employers can legally discriminate against
them. You know, Kevin, you're describing individuals that we all know that in addition to all the other problems they have, there's a mental illness problem that goes generally in that situation. And you can't make people do something they don't want to do. If they don't want to come in at 4:30 or come back at 6:30 or be told what time to come, they can eat and sleep and whatever. There are people that decide they don't want to be told what to do or how to do it or when to do it.
But we've found in our work that if you offer people housing and supportive services on their own terms, we can actually house extremely vulnerable people. Here's the key to your apartment, and there are no preconditions, and you can live in it. This model called Housing First that we've been experimenting with over the last 7 or 8 years, and that the city's actually been prioritizing. It's somewhat counterintuitive. And it's been very successful in engaging extremely vulnerable people with mental illness and addiction, some of them, most of them living on the streets, by engaging them into housing. Once they're housed, their health tends to improve. They're more likely to be stabilized on mental health medications and get into treatment. They're more likely to be successful in treatment. And they don't show up then on the streets long term. They don't show up in emergency rooms and in jails. Housing is the solution to homelessness, and particularly even very complicated homelessness, as it would turn out.
So the question, I mean, I think that the issue of reaching for solutions, it seems to be the bottom line here. What popped in my head just now, and maybe I'd like to hear what our listeners think in the next 4 minutes we have left in this particular segment. And I do know I'm right about that. We do have 4 minutes left in this segment, 410-319-8888. It's on the 26th of this month. This month, right? On the 26th, we're having a town meeting. Town meeting is going to be around juvenile justice. And we have all the players in the room. Everybody's going to be joining us, from state's attorney's office to the Secretary of Juvenile Services, to advocates, people who have been in the system themselves, to search for solutions, begin a round discussion on searching for solutions. So I'm going to suggest that on a dark night for the city council, which oddly enough is the same as the dark night for theater, I don't know if there's any connection there or not, but in the dark night for city council, is that which is, no, you meet Mondays. So other than on a Monday, that we convene a town meeting, that you have city council members, the Secretary of Housing, people from the Office of Homelessness, homeless advocates, people who have been homeless, to sit down.
Mark, are you suggesting in City Hall?
I'm suggesting anywhere we can put it.
On Wednesdays, we're live on TV at 5
o'clock. No. I'm talking about us hosting a live broadcast and discussing the issue. The question I raised earlier, which is if we're going to develop laws that actually have some teeth in them that will help end homelessness, we should be talking about that. And again, I'm keeping over and again what you said earlier in the program, which was this law about what developers have to do. I mean, if you pass laws that have no teeth, then they're
well, it just so
useless,
happens that the
right?
time we got the law passed, housing went into free fall. And so that contributed to the lack of success that we had. Nothing was being built.
It did, but over the last several years, housing has
it's
been
working,
built.
Right. It's working. And so now we have to focus on it. But
yes,
it just so happened when we passed the law, it was the same time in 08 or whatever, the market crashed.
Yes, that's true. But as Mark says, we can put more teeth into that law because it doesn't require anything.
What about when the developers come in and they build these projects like the Superblock, et cetera, and they don't have to hire locally? You were just talking about the high-end contracting
out. No, we are holding
out.
Their feet to the fire.
That's
we are
good.
Accomplishing that. No. We are working with the churches and with the unions, and we are accomplishing that.
And Jackie Rabar.
That's important policy. That's fantastic.
Yes.
And Jackie Rabar writes in, we do not need more laws to criminalize homelessness. I see people in jail on charges such as breaking and entering as homeless people sleep in abandoned houses or increasing or trespassing for lingering in a hospital emergency room to stay warm. Laws that target homeless people will increase the already overwhelming number of homeless people cycling through the criminal justice system. Studies have shown that 46% of women and 39% of men detained in Baltimore City Jail do not have stable housing beyond 30 days after release. All
yes,
that stuff is connected.
They're all connected, and this is the theme that you, Mark, have been promoting here today and that we all need to address. How do we actually end homelessness? The open letter that I wrote had 9 or 10 very specific solutions. Let's begin to work on some of them. We have a vacant-to-values program with 5,000 units of vacant housing. Let's dedicate them to people who can't afford market-rate housing. That's not currently the plan, but why can't we do that?
So we'll come back to this. We have to take a break. We'll come back to this in the beginning of March. And the head of Human Services and the head of Homelessness in Baltimore City have agreed to come back on the show. They could not come tonight. We'll continue that discussion, make it a little longer, have you all back, the people who have been homeless, and really sit down and talk about it. Maybe invite Ricky Spector back along with one of the council persons to talk about what can be done in the city. So we commit to that early in March we'll come back to this subject.
Thanks for creating space for that, Mark. That's fantastic.
Good to have you all here. We're going to take not a break. We're going to go right into a conversation we had with Rose Aguilar about senior citizens, women in San Francisco homeless. It's coming to Baltimore next. Listen up.